Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Andrea McLean. She's a Sunday Times best-selling author and presenter who was formerly the longest-serving host on Loose Women. Throughout her career, she's interviewed everyone from Oprah Winfrey to Beyoncé. Her latest book, Shameless, Finding Freedom and Resilience Through Failure, shares her experience of leaving Loose Women to take a risk on a new venture and it not going to plan. She soon learnt that failure happens to the best of us. Shameless is a guide to breaking free from shame and finding the courage to keep going through life's toughest moments. Welcome to the show, Andrea.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for joining us. And congratulations on writing such an honest book. I mean, this must have been quite hard to write, was it?
It's funny because, you know, when I'm sitting here now and I can hear you reading it back, it's a weird thing because when I started the book, I think I was so filled with hurt and humiliation and embarrassment and shame and kind of that howling at the moon feeling that you get when just not only has one thing gone wrong, but then this thing and this thing and this thing and this thing. Because I ended up, we lost everything. I lost my health. I became very ill through COVID and various other things, and that meant that the business couldn't carry on, and we ended up losing our home, and we lost everything. It was quite the calamity. But what is interesting is I didn't feel brave when I started it, but the me who finished the book, because it was nearly a two-year process actually of writing it and sort of coming out the other side, I look back and now I think it was quite a brave thing to do. But at the time it was just like a roar. This is how I feel and I need to put it down.
Yeah. So I was going to ask you about the process. So writing it, was it all part of the process of dealing with it all and coming out the other side stronger?
Yeah. I mean, this is my fifth book and I've written primarily about challenging experiences and then looking into the sort of the human behavior side, the psychology side about, okay, why do we react the way that we do to certain things? Why do we feel the way we do about certain things? And for me, sort of digging into, well, okay, this thing has happened. You haven't necessarily done anything wrong. You've made some mistakes, but things haven't worked out. Why this overwhelming shame? So it was digging into this whole thing of loss of status, loss of identity. Who am I if I'm not this person? And realizing that actually I'm just one person who's gone through this. And I just happen to have done a job that people could see. I worked on the telly, but we've all gone through this, and it doesn't matter whether we've been made redundant. Maybe we had time off work to have children and couldn't get back into the workforce at the same level that we're in. Maybe we told the whole world that we were getting married and put everything on social media and then the marriage didn't work out. There's so many things that we all do or have done in our lives that are embarrassing and humiliating. So the book then became an unpacking of every single part of our lives where either we've put shame on ourselves because we're embarrassed, or we've had other people heap shame upon us because things haven't worked out. And it's unpacking how we can work our way through that and feel better.
Yeah. I suppose having been in the public eye for so long, I don't mean used to as in you're used to as in know how to deal with it, but with the British press, I mean, they're so quick to bring someone up and then tear them down. They love tearing people down. And I think it's absolutely horrendous to see. And so I suppose you being in the public eye, I guess, made you feel that shame and embarrassment more because you felt that other people would be so ready to point the finger and, oh, look what happened to her, and be really mean.
Yeah. And so you might think, well, why talk about it? Because then it was pretty obvious that, you know, the papers were going to have their view and the public are going to have their view. And the reason that I decided to write about it was because I didn't want to hide anymore, because you kind of hide away. You don't see your friends because things aren't, you know, going so well. And for us, we couldn't afford to go out to dinner with friends. We couldn't even afford to meet friends for a coffee. And I didn't want to lie and say, oh, no, things are fine. We're just a bit busy. So I just, you know, hid away. So there was that side of it. And then the press side of it, I just thought, you know what? I'd rather just control the whole situation and go like, this is what has happened to me. actually, I feel like I have nothing to be ashamed of, and this is my story. And because I've been in the public eye for so long, I knew what the reaction would be, and I was braced for it. And what's been really fascinating since then is I was absolutely right. And, you know, the press absolutely did. When the book was released a week or so ago, they focused on, the headline was across many newspapers and online forums or what have you, Andrew McLean couldn't even get a job in Starbucks. And it was the word "even" that I really didn't like, because there are many people that apply for jobs everywhere and don't get them. But it was the fact that it made it sound that this was a job that's beneath anybody. It's not beneath, a job is a job. Yeah. And when times are hard, you will take any job that is going to you. But I knew that they would almost try and shame me again, if you like, for just trying to keep going and, you know, feed my kids and keep a roof over my head and this kind of thing. Yeah. And it's really wrong. It really is. But it was exactly what I thought it would be, and they didn't disappoint.
Yeah. Oh, well, well done for bracing yourself and knowing exactly what they were going to do. But I think the rest of the world, or people with any kind of compassion and understanding to humanity, will... I've seen, you know, the amazing reviews for the book, and I think everybody is so amazed and just think it's brilliant how honest you've been, and everyone's really kind of understanding and sympathetic and totally on your side and in your corner, which must be lovely.
Do you know the best bit about it is you write in the dark, you're at home, you're alone with your thoughts and your words, and you're sitting at your kitchen table just tapping away on your laptop, and then you kind of release it into the wild and just hope that people get it and hope they see what I was trying to do. And oh my gosh, the feedback has been outstanding, and the best part of it is people going, I've been where you are, and nobody understands when you're either an entrepreneur and your venture hasn't worked, which was in our case, or maybe people have got divorced and then friends took sides and they felt very alone. The feedback has been so brilliant, with just person after person after person just messaging me going, I completely get it. And you've made me breathe out and realize I'm not alone. And I just feel like I've, I don't know, I'm not a sporting person, but I've kicked a ball in the back of a net. It just feels so good to know that it's doing what I wanted it to do.
Yeah. And it would be amazing if you got one person saying that, but to have multiple people consistently saying that is just fantastic. You can't ask for more, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, I kind of wrote it, like I say, at the beginning, it was like a wounded roar. And then by the end, we'd gone through even more than, you know, when I started it, I thought things were bad. And you don't realize that actually, you know, the depths of despair has a trapdoor. There is a whole other level that you can go down. And for me, it was, I was very, very sick with COVID, which led to my business failing because I couldn't work. And then a year or so later, I ended up hospitalized with pneumonia and kidney failure and sepsis, and again, couldn't work. And it was, I suppose, I never almost you almost don't dare to hope that you'll come out the other side, because you're just putting one foot in front of the other, particularly when you're so ill and you can't earn a living and this kind of thing. So now to be sitting here living in Spain, talking to you, it's just so lovely to be able to talk about it in the past tense.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. So can you tell us what happened then? Can you tell us why you left Loose Women and this business that you had planned to set up, and what went so wrong with it?
Well, the business had already been running for a number of years when I decided to leave. It had started off as an online blog, which became an online magazine because of my journalism past. And then I was being offered, various brands were coming forward and asking, you know, if they could advertise on the site. And I thought, actually, no, I'm going to use my presence, media presence, as a force for good. So what I then did with my husband, he ended up coming all in to work on it as well. So the two of us are working on it together. And we decided to create a platform. If you can imagine a Knot on the High Street, but it was for female founders, that offered a service that helped women in some way. So therefore, people were clicking on to see me, but actually then coming across amazing, you know, products and services. It took months and months to set up, and just as we launched, the global pandemic hit, and we literally lost 50% of our business overnight.
Gosh.
So we pivoted and then continued to offer support to women, and decided to create a membership. And it was at that point I decided to leave Loose Women, because I'd been at ITV daytime for over 2 decades. I've been at Loose Women for 13 years. And I was loving what I was doing. It felt right. We had a lot of traction with what we were doing in terms of, you know, the magazine side of things. The appetite was there. It made total sense. What we didn't factor in, obviously, was how the pandemic would continue to impact business, me getting COVID, how that would impact business. And then anyone who's had a kitchen done or an extension built will know what this is like. We were building an app and we were using a company based in San Francisco, and it took twice as long and cost 5 times as much, just like an extension on your house. It was a lot. And then eventually I became ill and couldn't carry on working because of everything that I've said. So Gosh. It was a lot.
Yeah. And didn't your marriage break down as well?
No,
I thought I read that. I was like, oh gosh, how did she cope with that as well?
Oh no. I have been divorced in the past, but no, my current Mr. McLean is very happily.
Oh, good.
By my side.
Oh, thank goodness.
No, I mean, it was hard. I mean, anyone, you know, going through this experience, it's difficult. But when you're the two of you are running an entrepreneurial venture together, and you're both all in on it, yeah, it's stressful. And we have a blended family. There was a lot, you know, a lot going on. But no, we are all good.
Oh, good.
We're all good.
Good, good. And when and why did the move to Spain happen?
So the move to Spain happened because of when I got seriously ill and was hospitalized, and it took months of recovery. I lost 85% of my right lung. I was completely incapacitated. And my husband was told, I wasn't told because I was so out of it, that if we had left it for another day before we eventually had to bring an ambulance for it, was taken into hospital, I wouldn't be here. And
oh,
it was when I eventually got home and, you know, came out of hospital, and it, like I say, it took months before I was finally signed off. We both just thought, you wait for the perfect moment to do these things you've always wanted to do. I've always wanted to live in the sun and live by the sea. I grew up in the Caribbean. A lot of people don't realize this about me, but I actually grew up in Trinidad and Tobago in the Caribbean, and moved to the UK when I was 15. And so there's always been a big part of me feels really at home in the sun by the sea. And I just thought, we've been through all of this. What have you got to lose when you've already lost everything? And we have 4 children between us. The youngest got offered a place at university in Spain. And we thought, well, she's actually the last one to go. And how about if we just follow her? So she was like, oh, my God, we're not all going to live together, are we? I'm supposed to be going off to uni and doing my thing. You're not coming with me. So, no, we're far enough away. But that was why. It was this feeling of, you know, you only live once, and I nearly didn't make it. And actually the youngest is going to be there. And what is lovely, we literally sold the rest of our belongings. If it didn't fit in the car, it didn't come. And that was how we raised the money to come here. We got the dog sorted with his paperwork, and we patched up the car, and we headed off. And we had no idea what we were doing. And people might think we have a grand plan. We had no idea what we were doing. But we knew we could get a digital nomad visa because most of our work is still based in the UK. And I treated my job when we moved here almost a year ago. My job is to get well. And so that was what I focused on, was my health, my well-being, building my strength back up again. And it's taken, I'd say, about 9 months or so, and I finally feel like me again.
Oh,
which is
how wonderful.
Amazing. I feel like I've finally come out the other side, and it's a strange feeling, but I feel like I've come out the other end of the tunnel. You know, we're still you know, getting by and all of that. It's not like we've won the lottery or anything, but we love living here. The lifestyle really suits me. It really suits him because he's super sporty. He's discovered paddle. I thought I was going to be a golf widow. I'm not. I'm a paddle widow. He completely loves it. We've made lots of lovely friends over here. And yeah, we just enjoy it so much.
Oh, fantastic. You're obviously in the right place.
Yeah, I think we are. And we found it by chance. And we thought we will... we'll stay in places for maybe 5 or 6 weeks and just test them out. And we've just never left. We've just stayed where we are. So really like it here.
Yeah, we have. It's amazing, isn't it, how your surroundings and the weather and all these things can make such a massive difference to your well-being. You know, you get used to living in a certain place and with your friends and that becomes normal. But suddenly being somewhere else can suddenly be your normal, and you can realize that it's so much better for your health and your body and your mental health. And yeah, I'm so pleased for you.
Oh, thank you. And I think, you know, particularly the kind of industry that I worked in and living and working in London, it's very fast. It's very, and I don't get me wrong, I love all of that. There's a side of me that loves the kind of juggling lots of balls, spinning lots of plates, all of that. But I think you tend to treat your health as something that's on the side that you squeeze in between work. When you're, what is it they say, you know, a normal life, you have 99 problems. When your health is your problem, you have one problem.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately was one of those people that life had to teach me a lesson in terms of that. So now my work-life balance is very much the other way around, which is, I think, why Spain suits me so well.
Yeah. So do you feel differently about the word shame now? Because it's a really strong emotion and a horrible one to feel. And again, feeling like you did something wrong and make bad choices, which, let's face it, we all do in life. But do you look back at those times with a different view now? Do you feel differently about yourself in a more positive way?
Yes, I do. And I think doing the work on the book and the research on the book massively helped me with that, because it was digging into this understanding of what shame is, rather than just, we know what it is in terms of what it feels like, and it feels horrible. But in terms of, you know, what is it? Why do we have it? What's the point of it? And understanding that actually, you know, guilt says I did something wrong. Shame says I am something wrong. And it was learning to separate myself from, no, that, you know, I am not this thing, just experiencing this thing, that has massively helped me. And also, you know, after years in the public eye, I've known that there will be people who will take delight in your downfall. There will be people who will never like you no matter what you do. And there will be people who think you're okay. And actually, so much of that is out of your control. There's not really very much you can do other than continue to be yourself, you know, be kind, be nice, all of these things, and let what will be. But that is really hard to feel when you're feeling embarrassed and humiliated and all of that. It's easy to feel when life is great and tickety-boo, but it's hard to when things aren't going well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really easy for people who aren't in the public eye to you know, make comments about people and think, oh, she's all right, she's got it all and all this. People are very judgy in general. And being in the public eye, you, is easier said than done, but, you know, you have to be able to not let any of those things affect you. And I genuinely don't know how people do it with how vile the British press can be. I feel like we should have learned, or I say we, I don't mean we, I mean the British press should have learned an awful lot since Caroline Flack, and I don't think they have. I think they're still the same. They're still throwing shade at Meghan Markle every single day, and I think it's horrendous.
It is, and I talk about Caroline Flack in the book and the lessons that weren't learned.
Yeah.
After what happened to her. And, you know, there can be a lot of glib talk and, you know, a headline that lasts for a week, but actually the core behavior is the same.
Yeah.
But even digging into that, I understand it, because bad news sells. horrible news sells. Shame sells. You know, people say sex sells, but no, shame actually sells more. If you're shaming someone, people kind of queue up and they want to see it. You know, it's like a flogging in the town square. It's like someone in stocks having tomatoes thrown at them, and everybody loves having a gawp. But the difference is now, you know, this isn't just happening in a town square and then everyone walks away and kind of forgets about it. It's not even tomorrow's chip paper. It stays.
Yeah.
And it would be nice to hope that attitudes would change. Sadly, I can't see it ever, ever shifting.
No, it's very sad. Well, it's been amazing having you with us on the show, Angie McLean. Thank you so much for joining us. And if listeners want to get a copy of Shameless, it's available on our website, tre.radio. Angie, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.